Yesterday morning, I went to the St. Coleman's Community College in Middleton for the launch of Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And I suppose I went along there. It was Trish Carless, one of the teachers, who put it all together. She invited me. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to encounter or what I was going to expect, or indeed who I was going to meet. And one of the people I met was somebody who, I have to say in one word, was absolutely inspiring. In that she got up there and she shared her story, and you know, it was just absolutely breathtaking, and it got to me. And anyway, enough of it. Her name is Grainne Murray, and she was diagnosed with an eating disorder 10 years ago, and she joins me now on the programme. Grainne, good evening and welcome to CRY.
Good evening, Dara, and thank you very much.
Listen, you're very welcome. Now, before I go into this, I just want to refer back to that text message that I read out from Mick Sheehan. It was actually yesterday he was telling me why there were tailbacks. So that's grand, lads. Listen, there's no accident there today. You're grand. You're good to go. Anyway, that's a bit of good news. Grainne, listen, we met yesterday for the first time, and I stood there listening to your talk, and you addressed young people and some of us older ones as well. So if you don't mind, let's go back 10 years ago, where this all began.
Okay, Dara, well, 10 years ago, well, I suppose just a little bit kind of my history first is that I am a nurse by profession. I trained and qualified in the UK, my background, and I qualified as a midwife here in Cork and went on to work in Marymount Hospice for many years. So that was life before my eating disorder. And then 11 years ago, I suppose things started to change insofar as no different. Often eating disorders can just start with a diet fad and develop from there. And I suppose I had twin boys, and they're now 16, so they were very young. And I was working in the hospice at the time, went to return back to work, and then was diagnosed with a medical condition that, outside of my eating disorder, but it led me to have to give up work. Which was a huge blow. I was a dedicated nurse. I loved what I did, and suddenly I wasn't able to do it anymore. So I lost a huge amount of my identity. I kind of lost my self-worth. So I didn't know kind of where to go from there. This was something I did day in, day out, and really, really loved it. So I got over the anger, the initial sort of anger and feeling of inadequacy first, and just concentrated on my life as a new mom and loved it and enjoyed every minute of it and took on board all those lovely Kodak moments that I'll never forget and knew I'd never get them back again. So it was wonderful. And then suddenly one day, just a passing comment on weight led me to start thinking, gosh, I better do a little bit of diet here and a little bit of exercise and get myself sorted out. And that's where it sort of started. So gradually this feeling of well-being took over, and you start to do a little bit more and you gain a bit of confidence as people are commenting on you've lost weight and you're looking well, and you gain a lot of confidence back from that. But it was like, in my case, I felt it was a diet that just went too far, and then other issues, I started to use it as a coping mechanism. And over a period of my life, sort of the next 10 months, I had some personal issues. I had lost 3 family members to bereavement. These were all cancer-related deaths, so they had a huge impact on me personally, but also professionally, because I felt that this was my area of work and I should have been able to do something, and I blamed myself. I carried huge guilt. And so this kind of brought me into just a whirlwind of psychological issues where I just felt completely useless. And one of the, then sort of within this space of time, my son presented with suspected meningitis. And again, a lot of the same same feelings came out in me, this feeling of uselessness. Why couldn't I have caught, why couldn't I have done something earlier? So all of these became huge issues. And my coping mechanism was exercise and food restriction, because where I found I now couldn't control these things that were going on around in my life, but I could control my weight and I can control what I eat. So it gave me a strength that I had sort of lost over a period of time.
My goodness, I suppose if we go back a little bit, Grainne, to when you received that initial diagnosis of another illness, yes, that stopped you from working, I suppose in a sense that's where the foundations were laid that would, you know, manifest later on down the line into an eating disorder. That was just the start, and then it was one thing after another after another, and there you are, you're a trained nurse and you see these family members, they, you know, they've passed away from cancer, but you're feeling helpless that you can't help them anymore. You know, I can't begin to imagine how that felt, but you did feel then that, you know, the one thing you could control was your weight.
Yeah.
And that was, you referred earlier to this wellness, but I suppose in a sense it was a sort of a false wellness.
Yes, it was. And I suppose that's the nature of eating disorders. And they, you know, an eating disorder is so destructive. It just takes over. And where you feel you're in control, you're not. It's very much the eating disorder is in control of you. And it fills you with just this, this negative feeling. You've got this inner voice constantly in your head. It's like having a bully sitting on your shoulder 24/7, and it keeps, like, people will often say, why can't you just stop? Why can't you just eat? But it's far deeper than that. And as I say, it's a real coping mechanism. So this eating disorder almost becomes your best friend, because it's there all the time, and you feel when you're in the midst of it that it's helping you to cope with all these stresses going on in your life, but it's not. And it just drags you deeper and deeper and deeper into this just myriad of physical exhaustion, mental exhaustion, psychological exhaustion. And everybody can see it around you, but you can't see it. It's very, very, you just don't see it yourself. So it's a very difficult and dark place to be, and it isolates you, because there's a certain shame. I suppose there are still some myths around eating disorder, so there's a shame to it, and you retract from friends and from social situations. So it's a very isolating disorder that just really, really pulls you down with it.
And Grainne, at what point, you know, Did you get this realization that actually there's a problem here and I need help? And who did you go to get that help?
For me, that kind of, if you want to call it a light bulb moment, or I suppose my family and my friend, my family and my husband particularly, who's been an amazing support to me over the years, you know, they kept seeing the results of what this was doing to me. In a way, you see, after a while, you see this as almost constant nagging, and you become very deceitful in this disorder, because you become obsessive, you become compulsive in what you have to do. So when you have to restrict your food and you're exercising, over-exercising, there's a huge deceit. And that's part of the isolation, because you don't want people to see that. So for me, really, eventually, I think I was walking out in the rain. I was out walking out in real bad weather. And one night there was a storm, and I was out trying to fix a trampoline that had blown out in the wind. And this was around 12 o'clock at night, and I was trying to get the trampoline up and ready so I could get on it the following morning for this rigid exercise regime. And I think then I realized my husband was, you know, upset, and I thought, OK, I need help here now. This isn't going well. So I brought myself to my GP. And I suppose in hindsight, maybe some of my nursing, even though as people were pointing things out to me, you don't see them, but maybe deep down, I think my nursing probably did. Plus, I was a mum of young boys, and I needed to be there for them, and I needed to be well, and I wanted to be well.
So you went to your GP and you had a conversation with him?
Yeah, went to my GP, had a conversation. Pretty much a diagnosis of anorexia was there. And it was then I was going to be referred to Dublin for inpatient program, because I suppose 10, 11 years ago, the resources weren't really there. There wasn't a lot of intervention, a lot of help. So for me, the option was to go to do an inpatient program in Dublin. So I think within maybe 2 to 3 weeks, I got a bed in Dublin and headed off up. And that was a really, really difficult time for me, because I had to leave my husband and my young children behind. So again, I think some of my nursing came in here, because I was suddenly in this unit with younger girls, and I felt that I was kind of the older of the group, so I was minding them and this whole caring role. So I wasn't really concentrating on my own issues. So I did okay, and I progressed a little bit, but sadly, about 8 weeks into my program, it was a 12-week program, we had a tragic suicide in our family, and that really just was kind of the end for me. I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't put myself first. I needed to be at home with my husband and family at that time, so I had to come out of the program a little bit early, which was unfortunate, because then I had a lot of relapses over the next maybe 8 to 9 months.
But I suppose that really was the straw that broke the camel's back for you. I know you were there in Dublin and you thought you were helping others, and then this bombshell.
Yeah.
And that's all it took to sort of push you over the edge again.
Yeah, it was. And I came home and supported my husband, and things just started to get really bad for me at that point then, because my eating disorder was, I suppose, it took advantage again of this vulnerability, and it preyed on it. And for the next sort of 6 to 7 months, I was very, very unwell, and everything just seemed to escalate again. So I was waiting for a second time to go back into inpatient program, but was lucky to get some outpatient care in Cork. So this was the turnaround, and I had many years of intense therapy and counselling, and it was fantastic. And there's a lot of work in it, and I suppose one of the most important things with eating disorders is there's a lovely quote, it's you alone can do it, but you can't do it alone, and you need all the supports around you, and you need the help, and we need the services of multidisciplinary teams. And of course, in our families, because it's very important that the people that are closest to you understand the depth of an eating disorder and the destruction and everything that goes with it, in order to be able to help you through recovery.
I love that quotation, you alone can do it, but you can't do it alone. I think that's just a powerful statement. If I can move on a little bit, Grainne, because there is a lovely silver lining to this story. I mean, there is a very happy ending, and I know I met you yesterday.
Yeah.
But you spoke about you started to channel your creative writing talents, and you met with Trish Carless.
I did, yeah. I'm involved in I'm the chairperson of the Parents Association at St. Colman's Community College. So I met Trish Carless through that, and she was doing a creative writing course and invited some of us to come and do it with her. So I had this thought in my head for a while that I would write my own personal story. And I think I mentioned yesterday as well, is that many years ago when I was very ill first, my dad had said to me that someday you will help others in this situation. So that was always kind of in my mind, and that gave me hope over my many years of recovery and therapy. So when I met Trish, I went and did my creative writing, and I thought, I'll use this and I'll write my personal journey with my eating disorder. So Trish Carless was amazing and gave me lots of support, and I got my story done, and we just published it kind of for our own benefit. And I just felt my confidence. Once I had all of this up and out, it just changed my outlook. And I was really looking forward at this point. And I thought I would make contact with the Eating Disorder Centre in Cork and speak to the clinical manager, Trish Shiel, and ask if there was some way that I could channel my negatives into a positive and be a volunteer with them and help other people through eating disorders and making people more aware and passing on the education and the personal story.
Well, you know, that story you've written is a story I would love to read sometime. I do want to mention at this moment your dad, because I know you referred to him yesterday when he said that one day you will help others. And I know he's been going through his own health troubles at the moment. He's in hospital. You were up there earlier. And I just wanted to mention him and just to let you know that he is in our thoughts and in our prayers. And you know what? You will help others. And I know even right now, there are people listening to the show, and there'll be more people listening when we put up the podcast. You're helping others every day by your personal testimony and your personal courage to share the story and to let people know that they're not alone and they don't have to feel shame anymore.
That's it, and I think that's the most important thing. And this the launch this week for Eating Disorder Awareness Week is prevention. And it's about awareness and education and talking and breaking that silence and that shame and that stigma. And I think it was lovely to be around the young people yesterday and see the work they had done in preparation for the launch and putting their thoughts on paper through their artistic, because we all have unique talents. Those of us, unfortunately, that have eating disorders are can often be very caring, sensitive, empathetic, huge emphasis on perfection. And if we can channel all those wonderful qualities into positives rather than our image, and there's so much pressure there nowadays for the young people through social media, and it's about how they look and what size they are. If we can channel it into the character of people and other traits and wonderful things that they can do rather than the image all the time, then I think we really have to target that to try and if we can build more awareness and build more education, then we can look at prevention, and that's the key, and early intervention. And I suppose one important thing is when people have eating disorders, if there are the carers and the families looking after them and supporting them, it's the eating disorder is the problem. We're still the same people going through it. We still have all the same qualities, but we're stuck under this eating disorder that has a huge grip on us. But we're still that loving daughter. We're still that loving mom, that loving wife. We're still the same person. It is the eating disorder.
And I can pay testimony to the fact that you are a very loving person. And I had the great joy of meeting you in person yesterday. Grainne, time is against us, but I want to thank you so much for sharing your story, and I'd like for you to come in again, maybe come into the studio, you know, maybe in a few weeks' time, and we'll have a further chat. And if you do get to publish that book, I want a signed copy.
Thank you, Dara. You'll be first on the list.
Well, listen, you're so kind. And listen, to your dad, you know, wish him the best. I've met your dad in the past with Tops of the Town. Yeah. And please pass on my best to your lovely mother as well. And to your husband, who I met yesterday, and all your family. But listen, keep strong and keep positive. And remember, you know, only you can do it, but you cannot do it alone.
Thank you, Dara. Thank you very much.
Grainne, take care, and we'll catch up very soon, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Dara.
Take care. Good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.